Welcome to Pretty Lies and Alibis. Let's seek the truth and travel the long road to justice together.
What you know, alibiers? Happy Monday. Hope you're having a good one so far. I wanted to get this episode done. I got a busy, busy day. So we're going to jump right in. Tomorrow, I've got to thank some donors from over the weekend. Appreciate you guys so much. You guys are very generous and it helps me do what I do. So thanks. Music fact of the day. When a childhood friend of Ed Sheeran could not afford to pay her mortgage, he let her co-write the song Thinking Out Loud so she could get paid for it. The song has been streamed more than 500 million times on Spotify alone, and it went 3 times platinum in the UK. We all need a friend like Ed Sheeran, apparently. That's pretty awesome. All right, we're jumping in. Lori Vallow, she's filed a notice of alibi. She says she was in her own apartment in Rexburg, Idaho, when J.J. Vallow and Tylee Ryan died in the apartment of Alex Cox in Rexburg, Idaho. The defendant was with Melanie Gibb, David Warwick, and or Chad Daybell. Lori Vallow was in Hawaii when Tammy Daybell died at the home of Chad Daybell in Salem, Idaho. Defendant was with Melanie Boudreaux, we'll call her Melanie's, and or Audrey, I can't pronounce her last name, y'all. Sorry. Okay, so there's a lot to unpack with that. And we know Kay Woodcock once said, when things go down, they scatter like cockroaches. We know Lori likes people to do her other dirty work. Just look at the tasing of Joe Ryan. She had her little puppet brother, Alex, do that for her. So there's going to be a lot that I think that they're going to pick this apart with, because if you remember in Zulema's interview that we saw, Alex allegedly said to her, I think they're setting me up to be their fall guy or something like that. And also, remember, Lori told Melanie Gibb on the phone that Alex doesn't know where the kids are. So I think that that's going to be something that the state's going to jump all over. You know, she still has the conspiracy charges. She doesn't have to be present when the murders happen. It's still kind of the same penalty for her anyway. I mean, look, she cashed JJ and Tylee's checks. She lied repeatedly to law enforcement, giving excuses of where these kids were, saying they're safe and happy. And also, why is it that the only time Alex is in Lori's apartment in the middle of the night is when the night Tylee was murdered? You know, here's one thing. Charles Manson wasn't present at any of the murders either, and you know what happened to him. So I really don't think this is going to help too much. Also, we know that one of the last video of JJ was caught by a Ring camera. I'm curious to see comings and goings that night that Tylee was murdered, to see if any of them are caught on camera going back and forth. Although I do believe that putting the bodies in the car to be transported to Chad's was done inside those garages that attach to the house. You could do that with the door shut. Remember the texts about eggs, you know, do you have eggs? There's so much there. But her attorney is also asking for a joint settlement and strategy session with Chad. I'm thinking the portals are broken because, you know, why not hop in the portal and do your little strategy sessions that way? I guess they're on the blink. The filing says, come now, the attorneys for the defendant, and move this court for an order to allow the defendant and her attorneys to meet with the co-defendant and his attorneys in confidential joint settlement and strategy sessions as follows. Lori and Chad were married in Hawaii on November 5th, 2019. On February 20th, 2020, Lori was arrested in Hawaii and extradited to Idaho. She was able to talk to her husband by recorded jail calls from the date of her arrest to June 9th when Chad Daybell was arrested. The two have spoken by phone only one time since June 9th, 2020, which was an arranged phone call on July 26th of last year between the parties and counsel. Interesting. The call was approved by the prosecuting attorney and the sheriff and was not recorded. Number two, with settlement proposals, mediation, motions, and trial fast approaching, Lori and Chad would like to be able to talk together in person and on the phone about their options. What are their options? I'm not super privy to like the legalities of this. It seems to me maybe the best thing they can do is try to get their story sort of straight together. I don't see either one of them taking a plea deal, but the attorneys for the parties will attend any in-person meetings and phone conversations, but will not record the conversations and will not use the conversations as evidence. They can be deemed as for settlement purposes only. They list the rules of evidence that's under that could apply to the conversations. Now, there's a hearing on January 19th for Lori, 9:30 a.m. local time, and they're going to hear several motions. Motions to prevent death qualification of jury, motion to declare death penalty unconstitutional, motion to declare Idaho's capital punishment scheme unconstitutional, motion to declare defendant not death eligible, and motion for joint settlement and strategy sessions. Be interesting to see what Judge Boyce rules, especially on that strategy session. I didn't think co-defendants could talk. I'm sure their attorneys do, but anyways, that's the latest with that. I'll stay on it. University of Idaho, we're going to switch gears. Rumor control. There's been a lot of speculation about a blank page on that probable cause affidavit, but the court said it was not a redacted page. It's taken off the filing online. And it's kind of, they're saying there's nothing there. People were just wondering if there was something that was left out. There's also been a change of time for Brian Koberger's preliminary status hearing. The hearing will now be at 8 a.m. Pacific time and not 10 a.m. And the date for that, guess what? I don't have it right here on me, so let me pull it right up. That is going to be on January the 12th. So that's changed to 8 a.m. Pacific. Brian Enten was on News Nation Now with Ashley Banfield and said he had been in the neighborhood. And when talking about Koberger taking the trash out at 4 a.m. one morning with surgical gloves on, he noted each house is 3/4 to 1 acre apart. So that's pretty intentional. Kaylee's family is actually defending roommate Dylan, who said she saw Koberger as he was leaving the house after the murders. A lot of people online are attacking her and questioning why she didn't call 911 for 8 hours after she saw who prosecutors say is Koberger leaving the house after the murders. Now, a lot of experts have weighed in on this and say she may have just been frozen in fear. Also, I mean, we don't know if she was inebriated in any way. It's not unheard of with college students. But Dr. Catherine Coleman told Fox News, when a person goes through trauma, they're going to experience fight, flight, or freeze. Most people in their entire lives won't have to deal with this type of trauma and won't mentally prepare for it. Trauma becomes more difficult to process when it's something that is so far outside of our consciousness, it doesn't seem to make sense to us. In this case, no one ever thinks they're going to have this man come into their home and brutally stab their roommates. And a woman named Alana Zabel chimed in about Dylan. She was a roommate in an attack at a Chi Omega house in Buffalo in 1992. Her roommate had been beaten and sexually assaulted. And so she had a very similar experience with a delayed response. So 6 hours before she found her friend nearly dead, she came home and walked past the door to her roommate's room and called out to her. She heard heavy breathing and thought it was possible she was just in there with her boyfriend. And she went to bed and actually heard somebody come into her room and then heard the front door close. She said, I walked through the crime scene as it was happening without knowing, and the rapist walked through my room while I was there before leaving our house. I lived with the guilt of not calling 911 sooner my entire life. When she found her friend, she said, I didn't see any blood, and I thought maybe she had choked on her own vomit. So she called 911 and said her housemate choked on her own vomit. It wasn't until first responders got there that she realized the room was covered in blood from the beating and the assault. So, you know, I really do think that fight or flight comes in here. Our brains are amazing, and I love studying about stuff like this, or the freeze method. You know, first of all, had she approached or made herself known to Koberger, her and the other roommate very likely could have been victims number 5 or 6. I don't think there was any kind of intentional delaying on her part. I mean, these girls are traumatized. So, and also, if you watch the George Wagner trial, a lot of people said, why didn't he see her? Well, we talked about that tunnel vision during that trial, where when somebody is in the process of committing or committing a crime, they kind of have this very narrow focus with their eyes. It's part of the body's response to seeing and doing such gory, graphic things. And a former friend of Koberger's, his name is Rich Pasqua, is speaking out. And he told Fox News he met Koberger through some friends, and they told me he was a little weird and a little socially awkward. He said, I guess you could say that, but he wasn't a bad guy. He needed a job, and I worked at a pizza shop, and they were hiring. So Koberger came in and applied, and he got the job. So they worked together for a little bit. He said, overall, Koberger was quiet. He said Koberger didn't have a girlfriend at the time, and I want to know if he ever has had a serious relationship. I would love to hear from former girlfriends. But this guy's wife actually went to school with Koberger and said she doesn't ever remember Koberger having a girlfriend, and he didn't have a lot of friends. He also said what others have said, that Koberger was using heroin. He said the two of them actually used together a couple of times. And it should be noted that Pasqua is now 6 years clean.
We know that as a busy parent, you don't have time to completely overhaul your life in the new year. One change that's easy to make that will make your life easier in 2023 is Little Spoon. Most of the baby and kid foods at the grocery store is heavily processed and often on the shelf longer than your little one has been in this world. Not cool, and not the quality nutrition our kids deserve. Little Spoon makes everything fresh, organic, and uses absolutely nothing artificial. It's just like homemade, all delivered to your door and ready in seconds. From baby food to big kid, Little Spoon has you covered for years. Little Spoon even hides vegetables and chicken nuggets, mac and cheese, and more. Their smoothies come in pouches that make on-the-go snack easy, healthy, and tasty. And yes, I tried one. They're great. Did I mention it comes right to your door? It's flexible, easy, and everything stores in the refrigerator or freezer. You can pick your menu for a variety of foods to introduce to your child. The price is right, the quality is unmatched, so make this year's chaos a little more manageable with time-saving, delicious, and healthy meals and snacks your kids will love. Go to littlespoon.com and enter my code WHATTHEWORLD at checkout to get 50% off your first Little Spoon order. That's littlespoon.com and enter WHATTHEWORLD for 50% off at checkout.
So switching over, the BTK killer, Dennis Rader, has denied that he had any contact with Koberger, but believes Koberger may have studied him and his crimes. So in an email to TMZ, he said he thinks Koberger would lie in wait while stalking and casing the home. He said it was very much like what he did, and he can also relate to Koberger's dark mind. It's so scary that we share the world with people like this. It blows my mind. We don't know who. You look at some people, they're unassuming. And I read a statistic one time. It's like one in every 10 people you pass is a sociopath or something like that. But Kaylee's dad told CNN he doesn't think anyone in particular was targeted, but he thinks Koberger was stalking and hunting them. He thinks he was just looking for an opportunity, and it was that house. He said that's hard to take, but he also said, I'd be a little bit surprised if there wasn't a clear touch point that would suggest he was interested in one or two of the people more than he was the others. And also, our buddy Joseph Scott Morgan, the host of the amazing podcast Body Bags, one of my personal favorites, told Fox News that the location of that knife sheath could point to the intended target or targets in the murders. He said, I think that's where the attack initiated, and that's important. It goes to progression, and it goes to who the target was. it was perhaps the specific location he was bound for. It's a very dramatic thing when you think about it. He's near the bed, grabs the handle of the blade, and flips that button on the sheath, while his other hand drops the sheath in the bed after drawing the knife. Morgan said leaving the sheath behind was a gigantic misstep, obviously, which led to them finding his DNA, which they compared, as we know now, to DNA taken from the trash, and they were able to connect that through Brian Koberger's father. Former FBI agent Jennifer Coffendaffer told Newsweek, "I think the treasure trove is in that apartment and in that car. In my experience, you really can't hide blood evidence. It sinks in. Just imagine the upholstery of your car, the gas pedal. I know he was probably gloved. We know he was covered in all black in terms of his face and all, but he would have been bloody." She also said it's very difficult not to take part of the crime scene with you. And I've seen Forensic Files episodes where they'll find one little pet hair that was transferred from the crime scene to a car, to the apartment, and they can get people that way. Murphy, we've heard, initially wasn't in the room. Then we've heard maybe he was. So there's all kinds of ways. We probably know a quarter of the evidence they have against him. They're holding the big stuff back for trial. So Kaylee's dad, Steve, said Kaylee had her phone right next to her and she couldn't call 911. So these were just girls that went to sleep that night, and a coward, a hunter, that went out and picked his little opponent that was girls. That's probably why the house was targeted. Speaking of being in the courtroom with Koberger at his first appearance last week, Steve said he knows I want him to look me in the eye, so he didn't. He didn't give me that opportunity. He's scared to look at me in the eyes and start to understand what's about to happen to him. You know, he picked the wrong family. We're not scared of a conflict. We're not running. We're coming at him. Kaylee's sister also spoke to News Nation Now and said Koberger was true evil for stalking them for weeks. I still want to know where it originated, because we know classes started at the University of Washington State University on August 22nd. The first sign of stalking was the day before. Did he see one of these girls online? Did he go to the restaurant? His internet history, I think, is going to be huge. And he's a smart man intellectually, obviously a PhD student in criminology, but it's the rookie mistakes that get them. They're so busy covering up the big things that they leave a sheath behind, or they forget. They're going to see my internet search history. This guy's, I'm sure they have all the goods. She said they presumed Koberger's, Kaylee's sister said they presumed his innocence until reading that probable cause affidavit, and thinks Moscow police have built a solid case against him. She also said, to be honest, think the hardest part of this was to sit back and look at the totality of this. When my sister was texting me about new egg bites recipes, he was planning his next visit to the home, and that's really difficult. It's really difficult not to do more, not to have known more, but it's just the first step. A lot more evidence will come out, and I'm confident Moscow Police Department and Idaho State Police have the right person, and I thank them from the very bottom of my heart. About the possibility that Koberger was weighing in online after the murders, it's been floating around, nothing confirmed by law enforcement. But there were some comments that kind of seemed very much like maybe it was him. She said, "I don't think that he would have been able to refrain from engaging with the online community." So we are going to move on to missing mom of three, Anna Walsh. 39-year-old married mom of three has been missing since New Year's Day. She was supposed to take a flight from Massachusetts to Washington, D.C., where they have a townhome, but did not board the flight. She works real estate in D.C. and commutes for work during the week. She was initially set to fly to D.C. on January 3rd, but was called in for work for an emergency on New Year's Day. She hasn't used her phone or credit card and has not shown up for work. She was reported missing on Wednesday the 4th, which was 3 days after disappearing by her husband and also her employer. Police Chief William Quigley said it was common for her to work long hours without contacting her family, which may account for that 3-day gap in her husband reporting her missing. but it also should be noted that, as far as I can tell, police have not been able to confirm if she in fact booked a rideshare or got in one or even had a flight booked for January 1st. I'm sure at this point they know that. As far as I can tell, it hasn't been released. Friends say, totally out of character. She would never desert her three sons, whose ages are between 2 and 6, so very young kids. Investigators have also been investigating in D.C. where she worked. They say her social friends say her social media got very quiet after New Year's Day. Her husband, Brian, told police initially he was asleep when she ordered this alleged rideshare to the airport in Boston. And ironically, over the weekend, there was a fire at a home that she owned but was sold in March. Police determined that was accidental, not connected to this case, and the occupants who live there now got out safely. Initially, the husband was cooperating, but guess what? Yesterday afternoon, he was arrested after police developed probable cause, saying he was misleading investigators. Their three children were seen being driven away from the home by either relatives or close friends. So they drained a pool on the property. A canine team and investigator searched a wooded area near her home over the weekend and a small stream, but didn't locate anything related to her disappearance. They did impound a Volvo minivan. So her husband's arraignment was today. And prosecutors revealed just about an hour ago, they found blood in the basement of their home, a broken knife, and he was seen on surveillance at Home Depot buying $450 in cleaning supplies. So there you go. It looks like we're headed in the right direction. His bail was set at $500,000 cash. After his arrest yesterday, investigators returned back to that home. Now, here's the thing. Brian is awaiting sentencing in a 2016 fraud case involving the sale of two fake Andy Warhol shadow paintings to a buyer that he sold them to for $80,000. He pled guilty to this in 2021. He actually got the paintings from a friend who had recently bought them, and I've heard two versions. Either he convinced the friend that he could sell them for a big profit. I've also heard the paintings were stolen. I do not know which one is true. I'm trying to find confirmation. So he put them on eBay and put the original pictures up on eBay, but on the listing, he had a receipt that showed he paid $240,000 for these, which was probably faked, for the art from the Warhol Foundation. Told the buyer he would part with the photos for or the paintings for $80,000 at a loss due to an immediate need for home renovations. So the man who bought the replicas, his name is Ron Rovlin, claims to have the largest Andy Warhol gallery in the world. I really want to go. I love Warhol. So they decided to conduct the deal off of eBay and signed a contract saying that the purchaser had 3 days for a full refund. So he flew out to retrieve the paintings and pay. The next day, after unwrapping those paintings, he found there was no authenticity stamp on the back from the Warhol Foundation and also noticed the canvases looked new. So he swapped them out for fakes. And then he compared the paintings to the ones shown on eBay and noticed they're different. He tried repeatedly to contact Brian from November 8th through the 12th of 2016 with no luck. Eventually, Brian did reply back, made excuses for not refunding the money, and ultimately sent $30,000 of the $80,000 back to the buyer. $50,000 short, right? So Brian was arrested for one count of wire fraud and was bailed out by his mom. So I looked at the court documents and it shows issues about a sentencing, which was home confinement, but current records don't show the status of that case. Now, a friend of Anna's, her friend Peter Kirby, said she's a remarkable woman. She's a powerful executive. She's a loving mom. She's just a loving wife. She's one of the most remarkable humans we know, and we're very scared. We miss her a lot, and we're just praying for her to be safe. Evan Terrell, a friend who used to work with her at a hotel in Boston, told Fox News, "Everyone knows and loves her. We just want her home safely. Her husband and her boys were someone she talked to every single day, and the fact she hasn't been in touch with them is concerning and not like her. It's just really scary. Her husband and her boys were someone she talked to every single day, and the fact that she hasn't been in touch is concerning, and it's not like her to not be in touch with anyone. It's just really scary." So far, police, have found that evidence in the basement, and they are currently looking for her, which doesn't sound good. Unfortunately, we see this so often. So that's all for today. I'll be back tomorrow with an all new episode. Hope you guys have a good rest of your day. We'll see you soon.